see you coming back in here with duck knee jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Okay, lads, what's the number one rule of GAA Podcast Club?
Give out as much as pontificate, moralise and complain.
No, you're wrong. It's say you're not going to give out and then sneak in as much giving out as you can.
No, the number one rule.
That's our number one rule.
The number one rule of GAA Podcast Club. What is it?
Don't talk about it.
Don't write off Brian Cody. What do we do on Friday?
You wrote off Brian Cody.
We wrote off Brian Cody.
Did we?
Oh, we definitely did. I wasn't honest.
I said that Kilkenny, the players were terrible. I said I'd never write off Brian Cody. It turns out the players are better than I thought they were.
I think you said the only reason that Kilkenny had any chance was because people are afraid to write off Brian Cody.
I sure wasn't enough.
Let's write him off.
So who won there yesterday?
Right, we'll talk about that later on in the show. Welcome to the Three Man Weave, the Balls at EGA Podcast. Morris here, Mick and Mark with me here as usual. Lance, how's the form?
Not bad, Morris.
I'm okay too. I wrote off Brian Cody and I feel pretty foolish about it, but other than that, all good, you know?
And also, I believe you're not going to be on the podcast this Friday. That's awkward enough.
That's new, yeah.
Yeah, although, given that you presented, are you going to like pull rank somehow that you have to be there to...
I was thinking about this over the weekend.
Get kicked off because Gary
I was
won.
Thinking about this at the weekend. I might have to take a day's holidays or something like that and step off myself and let Morris present the showdown between Gary and...
For anyone,
I feel like before I'm demoted, I deserve a chance at a playoff. This is Leinster Hurling rank pulling foil here once all over again. Just
I guess the handicaps is very Leinster Hurling championship oriented because nobody ever gets a bloody rematch. I still think I'm owed two mandatory rematches.
Just for anyone who didn't hear... on our Guess the Handicap podcast on Friday, Morris lost, which means that Gary Connaughton is the new interim champion and he will face me, the reigning, defending, undisputed champion.
Yeah.
I suppose, but to become the undisputed champion on Friday.
Yeah, it's actually very disputed because of Gary's win, of course.
That's Friday's show. This is Monday's show. We're going to start with Gaelic football. We'll hear a small bit from Rory Began and we'll chat about the hurling later on the show. But on Saturday, those wins for Tyrone and Dublin, an absolutely awesome Dublin. Can I make a point about this game before we get going, right?
Sure, this is getting going. Yeah,
you've abandoned introducing the show, but sure, we go on.
At the very start of the year, I made a point about, I think Tyrone are flatline teams because of how physically fit they are. So I'm talking about pure, I'm not saying that's the only reason, but in terms of pure athletically, Tyrone and the likes of Dublin are way out ahead of other teams. And I think this weekend was the perfect case and example of that. Like you saw what Dublin did in the last 10 minutes and so for some bizarre reason, people keep crediting their bench, despite the fact that it was the final 10 minutes runs by Jack McCaffrey and Brian Fenton, who'd played over an hour that game, who maintained that level of performance. Similarly, after 50 minutes, I think Tyrone were a point ahead when Ty Killeran, it was either a point or 2 points, and then Matty Donnelly went up, kicked the point on the right to put it out to either two or three, and that was it. Roscommon couldn't live with them then for the final 20 minutes. Mm. But that was purely down to a level of, like, whatever about styles or systems, that is a level of absolute conditioning that you just can't match.
And Donegal did it on Sunday, just to, again, it's kind of that sort of Division 1 All-Ireland contender versus a kind of an up-and-coming team. That was the difference again.
And I think the reason that, I think sometimes this is over-credited, but the reason that sometimes people misunderstand it, this only became really clear to me when I chatted to the former Limerick Shawnee Tobin for a piece about the Limerick Hurlers and the work they're doing in terms of strength and conditioning. And he pointed to the fact that when you look at someone like Aaron Glan, the fact that Aaron Glan can invest so heavily in training means that he's got an extra half a yard, which gives him an extra second with the hurl, so he looks more skillful because of that little gap. And I think the player, the case in point, is Cathal McShane. And it was interesting, Peter Canavan did an interview in the Irish News at the weekend, and this is what he said. Paddy Faulkner is one of the strongest fullbacks in the game, and Cathal was shrugging him off as if he wasn't there the other day. Cathal wouldn't have done that 2 years ago. So that's down to a level of physical, like athletic improvement that other teams just can't match, and that's what happened against Cavan. It's the exact same thing he did the weekend.
Isn't it scary when you think about that? At club level, there's such a big difference between, say, junior footballer, intermediate footballer, and like the top senior teams in each county. And then at county level, they're up another step again. And then even within that, like Meath are a Division 1 team now next year. Roscommon are a Division 1 team or were this year. So like the gap between the top five or six teams and the rest, like they're almost like a different species.
Yeah.
Yeah. How big a difference is there between a Junior B guy who thinks he's fit and Colin McShane?
I think Colin McShane is the best example because Peter Donnelly came in... Colin McShane regularly in interviews references the work he's done with Peter Donnelly, who came in 2013. So this is a process going back years in terms of, so Peter Donnelly came in as a strength and conditioning coach originally. I think he's now a bit more of a football coach. But when he was doing athletic work with them, he went down to specifics as, like, he retrained them how to run, their running styles. Like, he was, like, developing huge, and this is, I mean, he's spoken openly about this before, they're doing huge mixtures of aerobic and anaerobic stuff. So it wasn't just purely down to putting on size. It was also in terms of increasing, like, stuff like lung capacity and stuff like that as well. I think that's like the difference with Tyrone. There's so much stock put in the fact that, and you saw the debate in the Sunday game last night, I'm sure, about how much they've changed system from the Donegal game and to now. And I think the real difference is that they're playing teams who are way, way below them in terms of that aerobic capacity. And that you can't make up that gap in a year. Like, Roscommon lost by 18 points last year. This year was 4. So they've improved, definitely. And you can see that in terms of strength condition, but to try, that's the real gap, that's the, what we're trying to bridge, that is way bigger. I think there's a lot more stock to be put in that than there is to systems or styles.
And like, we're talking about backroom teams, Peter Donnelly had going back to Tyrone a few years ago. Since he went back, they've gone All-Ireland semi-final, All-Ireland final, and you wouldn't argue against the going to an All-Ireland final again this year.
Yeah.
No, definitely not after that result. Now they're almost, you almost think of them as in the semis at this stage. McShane is an interesting one that you bring him up, because the one thing I noticed in the first half of that game is that I counted 3, I think there might have been 4 actually, 4 times where he won a ball that he didn't get to first. You know, that he was there. He got a score early on where he just nipped the head of somebody from behind and tapped it. There was another ball which was going out that he kind of just got there with his foot ahead of the player and got tripped up. And I think there was another time as well, definitely. So for him even to do that, basically playing from behind and still getting there first against 2 lads sometimes. And actually, you talk about how do you beat a sweeper. It's it's being so much faster and more physical than them that you can come up from behind and beat them to a ball, as opposed to kind of getting out in front of them, you know?
Yeah. And I like that's a great point about getting to the ball, because it kind of, it's a nice segue to the Dublin game as well. The challenge, I think, for managers, the initial 90% isn't to try and find a style or push up on Dublin, all this stuff. It's try and match them in that aspect. So your first port of call shouldn't be, do we have a system that we could limit Dublin? Your first port of call is, do we have somebody fit enough to live with Jack McCaffrey?
You didn't bother asking that question. It's not even fitness. It's speed. Like, if you have someone,
it's a mix of both. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose fitness, speed for so long. Like, you need 2 people. If one lad's fast enough, he's probably not going to be as fit as him. So you're going to have someone, another person of the same speed to come in. But no, like, you're just kind of looking at the first half there against Cork. You're looking on, what are they meant to do here?
Yeah, you're like, we talked about this earlier. I don't know what they're meant to do, because that's what I mentioned to you guys earlier. And I'm since rowing back on it, because it was very much spur of the moment, and we'll see how we go. But there was an epiphany for me during the first half of the Dublin Cork game. And I will let you get back to your point, Maurice, which was that I think Jack McCaffrey might be the best footballer to ever play the game. And there was a point where I just thought, I don't think anybody's ever been as unstoppable and as useful in every single blade of grass on the field as McCaffrey is. And, you know, I'm obviously being a little bit facetious in saying that he's the best ever when he's like a guy at such a young age, but there's definitely the potential that he could be, you know. And he's at the stage now where he's manned the match all Ireland semi-final and final last year. He's been Dublin's best player in a number of huge games over the years, and this year he's unplayable. He's been Dublin's best player in every game again, and, you know, kind of nearly won the game on his own in the first half.
Can I tell a Jack McCaffrey story?
You can.
Last year I went in to watch Galway play Dublin in a league final, and this was 2018. This was a different era for Galway. There was a lot of more optimism about the direction they were going. It was a simpler time, Mick, and
We just thought it was.
Or maybe we just hoped. It was delusion, perhaps. But we watched what we thought was Galway narrowing the gap on Dublin. And I remember leaving, and there was a degree of optimism about maybe some team could. I remember that was, I think, also the inception of our Peter Cook love affair, Mark. But we watched that game, and it was like,
that's right.
maybe there's a team that can match Dublin, right? So I went, watched that game, went in, finished a shift of work, and went, for anybody who knows Drumcondra, there's a gym just down the road from Crow Park as well. And I went into that gym, it was like late at night after work, and it was pretty much empty. And then Jack McCaffrey arrived in, I think he might have been doing he's studying to be a doctor at the time, he was doing an internship somewhere around there, and arrived into the gym that night and started training beside me. And I never even dawned on me that he still hadn't played. It was after his cruciate injury that he did the year before, and he was yet to come back. And so the night of the final, he was in there by himself training. And since then, he came back, was man of the match in Ireland semi-final, man of the match in a final, was probably unlucky not to get player of the year last year, and has improved again coming into this year. I think he's incredible.
He's unbelievable. And Jack McCaffrey aside, like, you're watching that Cork game going, Jesus, maybe there's some glimmer of hope for some people, like, this Dublin defence is there to be got at. And then you realise that on the bench, they've got James McCaffrey, Owen Merchant, Johnny Cooper, and Rory O'Carroll to come in. And also, yeah, Michael Fitzsimons and Jack McCaffrey had two brilliant games, and so did Philly McMahon. So, like,
they're an awesome team. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Like McMahon, we're talking about, like, I heard somebody, God forbid, mention that McMahon's on the way out two games ago. Since then, in the Leinster final and in this game, he's been nearly Dublin's best player, probably, you know, close to it anyway.
And nearly evolved to this player. Like, he's starting to look a bit more like a wing back than he ever had before.
Yeah. And definitely, like, you fancy him for a score nearly every game now. Yeah,
Cork were very good, but Hurley probably had his worst game of the year. And it wasn't that he was bad, but just that he wasn't able to get shots away or get any sort of freedom to.
Yeah, he was suffocating.
God, he got one lovely score though.
The dummy coming back in.
It was pure Colin Corkery, wasn't it? A real Cork forward.
Toss that inside. Was there a pass on man coming through the middle there?
I just watched the dummy.
As soon as it hit his boot, I'm like, that's probably over the bar.
Who cares about goals? No, but like that was it. Like the game that Simon's had was phenomenal.
Exactly. We should just talk about like what you're saying about Dublin there quickly. As I did see a few people, you know, the argument online all the way from Saturday through last night was were Dublin genuinely rattled there for a few minutes against Cork, or were they always playing in third gear? And I think it's somewhere in between. I don't think they meant for the game to get as close as they did.
Yeah.
And when they needed to step up, they were able to. They won't be happy with getting into that position, right? But in those arguments, there's the conversation of this is the first year Dublin haven't really brought anybody in. There isn't really a new player in the team. Kind of, but at the same time, what Mark is saying there is like that the squad doesn't look as strong because they had four lads or three lads that haven't been involved that are suddenly going to come back into it. And now you're going to start looking, especially at the backs, as being a kind of a wide open. Is Keane O'Sullivan keeping his place on that team? By the All-Ireland final. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, the first half, now, there was, again, this isn't even the double, because you wouldn't even expect of an inter-county team. They were standing off lads that if you were at club level, you'd be like, what the hell are you doing there? They were just letting Cork go on, have a shot there, stick it over the bar at times. So, like,
but I suppose,
that's never going to happen again for the rest of the year.
I think so. And I think now that competition is there, and I think there'll be a lot of harsh words and everything else, and I think that I only see Dublin improving. And it's funny that people will say, oh look, they're not bringing lads through, but it's almost when you have that kind of year where lads like McCaffrey did last year are coming back into it at the business end, that's new competition, it's fresh blood into a squad again, you know. And I think that we'll feel like Dublin are at their, you know, that suddenly places are up for grabs at this stage of the season. Rock, like, I think nearly has to start the next day at this stage.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Keane O'Sullivan and his place, because that's probably an issue at centre back. And then Dublin go and recruit the star centre back from this year's club championship, Jeremy Connolly. And so we might as well bring
not
that up.
A hope.
He's back. Jeremy Connolly is back in the squad. For those who missed that, I did a piece last February or March, maybe, when Vincent's played Bridget's. Connolly, his first championship game in a year. Was it that recent?
Month.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that was
forgotten club.
I did a piece. Connolly played for Vincent's against Bridges. He started a centre back and was brilliant. I remember at the time I was saying on this podcast. So this isn't like hindsight analysis. I said at the time that he's definitely good enough to play in county football if he wants to. And Clark, the dumb selector, was up there watching him and seemed pretty happy with what he saw as well. So I think it's no surprise that he's back involved. Probably the manner of it is a bit questionable, but I don't think people. I think there's a lot of speculation around the situation that I don't think people necessarily know how long he's been back in training with them. Just because Jim Gavin announced it now, I don't think that, like, it's a hard one to necessarily point either.
I think we looked at each other there, want to talk about the same thing. Can we listen to the way Jim Gavin announced this?
Last night's game was tough. A lot of tired bodies this morning, but you know, the guys will get as much recovery as they can. They go, I'll go back to work in the morning, but in Monday morning. But we'll try and get a couple of sessions in this week. And you know, it's good we had got James McCarthy back on the pitch, Owen Merchant, Johnny Cooper, Jim McConnelly's back training with us, Rob McDade is back. Paderborn Coffee is with under 20. So Darren Gavin is coming back as well this week. So there's a whole host of players who are returning to play, and then you have the squad themselves, the guys who played at the weekend. So you know, there's great competition there for match day place. And I suppose above all, from the team manager perspective, is that, you know, to see the work ethic and the respect the guys have for opposition, the preparation piece and that they give, and you know, they all just want to represent their county of Dublin and their communities and parishes and clubs to the best of their ability. And we're just really fortunate to be working with a great group of men.
Like, he is a comic genius, and I don't care brilliant. What anybody says. Yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing there. He named the last two players he mentioned I've never heard of, right? Because he wanted to throw that in as the most in the middle of a group of players list you've ever heard in your life. It was the best announcement I've ever heard in my life. I've come full circle on Gavin. I think it's all for... I think he's actually trying to entertain in the biggest possible way. He's learning off Cody, you know?
Keenan Sullivan thing, though, is there is a question there of how did they solve that, because basically what a lot of the problem that is happening there is that he's dropping off, like he was sweeping in front of Hurley, they're keeping Hurley quiet, but then they're actually kind of missing a body. If some team's able to counter-attack at them at pace before the double players can get back, they're missing someone.
Or Kerrigan just didn't track back at all, so you had somebody like White as well doing similar early in the game. He probably ran out of legs towards the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. So they almost nearly need, if the Broly always maintain they don't play sweepers and they don't do whatever, but O'Sullivan does sweep. Yeah. He sweeps from the centre back position, just sits deeper than a normal centre back. But do you need an actual sitting centre back there as well?
Or it's somebody who's just going to mark their man, because I don't think he looks like he might not have the capability to do that anymore. That maybe, like, I wonder, is it the goal that he'd drop off and you'd have somebody like Brian Howard eventually to drop back and try and pick up his man if the play isn't quick enough that they can do that?
I would say there's not many better teams. There's a lot better teams than Cork left to play, but there's not many better equipped to take advantage of that particular scenario, because Cork are a running team and they have three lads who will do that to you all game, you know, and not many other teams will do that to you down the middle.
Isn't it very depressing that, like, you look at Cork and what they did at the weekend and then you're thinking, geez, Tyrone are going to gobble them up if they play the way they're not going to get any of that space in the Tyrone back line that they got on Saturday night?
We move off of Cork, but like, I just think that I just hope that they take serious positives from this year, because they're not the kind of county for us to sort of say, ah, well done, lads, you're beaten twice, but you show up and it's better than you show getting relegated to Division 3. They're going to start next year having basically won nothing. They still got two games to go, in the Super 8s. But, you know, if they end up losing these two games and in Division 3, and it's going to be hard to lift themselves, but there's loads to work on there. They're a completely different football team than we thought they were.
Yeah.
And I just hope that seeps through into the entire county, you know?
Definitely. They deserve so much credit for the way they played. Like, not even just going and having a go, with the actual individual performance. Yeah. So many of them were...
Yeah, brilliant.
Before we move on from Dublin, Cluxton, lads. I did a piece on site last week, people can go read it, on the current standard of intercounty goalkeepers, and it's actually a perfect time to bring it up, because this weekend was the perfect demonstration of the incredible high calibre of goalkeepers that are out there right now. So I thought Cluxton's kickouts were incredible, for not only in terms of accuracy, but what he instigated. He was always looking to put somebody in a position for the best attacking play, so it wasn't just the kickout, it was what came after it. Sean Patton doing what he does. I thought Shane Ryan for Kerry was brilliant, his kickouts especially. That's a guy, I thought that was a really brave call. That's a guy who plays outfield for his club, but he's really good for his club. He kicks frees and everything, and because of that, I think there might have been a policy that you don't pick a goalkeeper who isn't playing for your club in goals, and Peter Keane decided to go away from Murphy and pick Ryan, and I think he's been vindicated in that now. You've obviously got Niall Morgan, who again was incredible, and has been consistently, I think, in
Did
terms
you see
of
the analysis of Peter Canavan had at half time for that on Saturday night. It was brilliant. He was talking about Morgan getting the ball in open play, and it led to a Tyrone score, and he was just looking at Morgan looking around the pitch before he actually got the ball passed to him to see where he's going to hit it, and he just hit this peach of a 60-yard ball.
Yeah.
In on top of Tyrone, it was just...
In on top of Sludden, wasn't it?
Yeah. Was it someone else, and Sludden passed? Sludden ended up scoring, I think.
There was two involved.
Cassidy hand passed to Sludden, and Sludden brought it over.
It's funny you talk about that, because that according to Rory Beggin, is exactly what goalkeepers want to do. You might hear this now quickly. This is Rory Beggin. I caught up with him last week just to chat about this current phenomenon. If you want to read this full interview, you can go up on site on Bozzy and read it. But this is just his analysis of the way goalkeeping is going right now.
Like, if your press is good enough and you're tighter to your man, like, that shouldn't happen. Like, they shouldn't be winning short kickouts if your press is good enough. Like, your press, if your press is full court or whatever it is, like, you need to be forcing them along, like, because, as you said, the goalkeeper is that option to exploit it. And I find with the caliber of goalkeepers these days, like, you watch Niall Morgan, you watch Cluxton, you know, they're not here to give the handy pass as well. Like, I would notice when them keepers get the ball, their head up is for a long kick pass. It's not that we're here just to play about in their own full back line. I'd notice that Niall Morgan, or whoever it is, would get the ball, they'd be head up, and they're looking for a 45-yard pass up the field. If that's not positive football, I don't know what yeah. Like keepers, we want to kick the ball. Like, we want to kick the ball along, even out of our hands or off the ground. And it's only what the other team plays against you. That's what determines how negative the game will be. Like,
I think that's a really good point about that. The goalkeepers now, their inclination is to instigate something positive, and yeah. They're all capable of doing it. Like, previously we talked about, you know, all the days of putting the big guy in goals, they're gone, and it was about what they do in terms of their kickouts. And now it's moved beyond that again, and these are like incredibly high quality footballers who just happen to be goalkeepers as well. You get situations like I just mentioned Kerry, where now every player goes back in goals, but I don't know if the current caliber of goalkeeper is fully appreciated, because you've got proposals that would absolutely decimate them in terms of stuff like banning the back pass.
I don't think that's going to come in. I hope it doesn't, and I don't want to really
do that on it. Yeah,
yeah. I also don't want to promote it too much, because it is nonsense. Like, I think you don't know what's there until you don't have it, if you know what I mean. And we've had conversations about Galway in the last couple of weeks, and we could have the same conversation about Mayo today if we wanted to. We don't necessarily need to get into it, but they're two teams that have, you know, chopped and changed goalkeepers, and it's what's the priority and various different things, because they don't have that brilliant footballer that's needed to be a goalkeeper these days. And you've got it in Beggin, you've got it in Cluxton, you've got it in Morgan, and you've got it in Patton. You know, there's more as well that you're talking about, but like, I think it's nearly the key of any Gaelic football team at the moment, isn't it? It's like, that's where you, that, like, more, like, even more than in the last couple of years, I think it's become the place that you start to say, right, he's going to start all of our attacks. Like, who's the best football, who's the literally the best passer of the ball in our squad? Let's put him in goal. You'd nearly look at it that way.
You talk about, like, systems and what went right and what went wrong, and Clifford being amazing or whatever, Kerry and Mayo on Sunday, but, like, really that game was close, and then all of a sudden Mayo just could not win their own kick out, and panic. You could feel the panic setting in everywhere, like around the stadium. It was just like, this is another one, another kick out. It was almost like even a wide was horrendous for Mayo, because it meant that they wouldn't have to have a restart. It was just like, if Kerry could get the ball dead at all, it was causing consternation in there. I couldn't understand, whatever about pressing and finding a man and the difficulty of it, why was Clark so slow with his kick out? Saturday night was a real problem, because RTE kept showing replays of shots or frees or goals or whatever, and while the replay was being taken, the kick out nearly every time from both Cork and Dublin was already gone. So you were hearing, was it Loney was in commentary Saturday night? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
They were commentating away on the game going on, and you're still watching a replay. You were watching the replays on Sunday, and Clark was still getting the ball from behind the goals after the replay had begun.
Yeah, the only thing I would say on that is, if you watch I noticed this, I was at the game, and you know, was it the James Dunhu's chance that should have been a goal that he put over the bar? If you watch that back, it looked, for a second I was like, geez, Paul Geaney was overzealous. He looked like he was celebrating the goal, threw his hands up over his head. And then I realised it was a tactic. The entire Kerry team, the second scored go over it, would throw their hands up and assume their position. Like, it was instantaneous that no matter how quick he was, they were getting into formation, that they would, I think if there's one thing you can take away from that game, like, there's, how fit were Mayo is a question, and do we really know how good Kerry are, whatever, we'll talk about that later on. But the one absolute certain takeaway is that you have to, this full press now is the only way to go, I think, to expose teams. It isn't.
It's the only way to go if your goalkeeper can't kick the ball out distance-wise. Like, you do that against Donegal, they're going to destroy you. You see, Cavan tried to lose the final, and they hit Michael Murphy on the opposition 45.
But that's why I think that it's so important that who you have designated. Like, Clark's plan there was, he does what he did against Kerry. They'd bunch, they'd break, but Kerry against Galway, sorry. And it goes to show how ridiculous Galway's kick-out strategy was on both sides of the ball. Like, you saw the analysis, which was actually very good in the Sunday game last night, of Donegal's kick-out against Meath. And they had this, they thought Rochford had bought it from Conor Finn. And I've seen Bernard Power do this a lot. So Bernard Power will flick his left hand three times. So, and everybody, the entire team are totally in sync. So you see Burke and Farrher for Conor Finn on the inside forward line. They've moved to the other flank. They know which wing the ball is going. So they vacate that space over there. Ronan Steele will run like a screen line across it. And the ball will be launched into that area. And it's just a man running onto the ball. It's perfect. And everybody is totally in sync with it. Versus what looked like hit and hope for Galway against Mayo. It was him trying to pick out a man, just relying on his accuracy. Like, there was no coordinated plan. They did their kind of minor cluster thing. It didn't work. Similarly, if you watch what Donegal did as well, it was actually really similar to Conor Finn. That's why I thought the analysis was good, trying to vacate that space. So the inside forward line clearly knew what the kick-out call was, because they'd vacate that space and it's a man running over there. But the reason that I think that is, it's easy to contest is because, you know, if you've got the press on, you know where the ball is going, and then it's about your matchups. So, yeah. So Kerry knew, when they got the press right, it was about the matchups. And they also knew that Moran had the beating of, if it was Vaughan or O'Shea, Moran had the beating of in the air. And that's how it proved. I mean,
the other question...
Yeah, but there is a few, sorry, to just to back up your point a little bit. Like, Cork did it a couple of times, where if you kick the ball long enough, you can bypass the midfield, it drops into a wide open half-forward line.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's a scoring chance immediately. You know, it doesn't happen all the time, and you'd want to really rely on a big boot and not do it all the time so that they can't just drop back to 10 yards. But, like, it does work. You know, it is just one other side to it. Like,
do you be brave enough and push your full back line into the half back line? If you're doing the full, so an opportunity to do a full press up to the halfway line, say, and then there's this massive gap because the halfbacks have pushed forward, yeah, into midfield to the full back line. Whereas if you push them all up and go, right, go kick it out 100 yards, get over us. And also, there is the thing that, yeah, if you're asking what goalkeepers have the ability to do that, you're talking Niall Morgan, Sean Patton,
Roy Beggin is not Roy Beggin anymore.
Maybe, yeah, it was, yeah, Morgan I'm thinking of rather than Cork, actually. It was Tyrone that did it a couple of times. Yeah. Sorry, I actually couldn't remember the exact example until you said Morgan there.
But say, Kerry's, there's fallback on that, right, was that you had, so they, Kerry played like a 4-4-3 press. That was like, if you were to put a formation on it, right? And the final four, alongside Moran and Spillane, you had Paul Murphy and Stephen O'Brien. And their natural inclination, the safeguard, was that they'd slowly drift back. And if the ball was lost, they'd immediately retreat and set up there. So that's two players back to try and counteract for if... Now, Clark doesn't have it in his locker either to clear that, to like bypass the full press. But if in the odd chance that it did happen, you have that set fallback, those two players. So that's why... Remember, you saw... Like, O'Brien wasn't marking the man when he intercepted Clark's kick out, caught it over his head and ran back the ball. He was marking space, but he was able to react quickly enough when the ball was in the air, because it's not going short, that he can read the flight of the ball and then drop back and get on it. And suddenly then it instigates an attack the other way. But the other scenario there was that his natural inclination, he's already slowly dropping back. So if the ball had gone over his head, he'd match him anyway, because he's going that way as well. So it's not, I don't think you're as exposed if you've got like that safeguard that players like... Even if it's just extent of your stand, you're marking from the back, and that you can drop back that
is,
way.
Is goalkeeping going the opposite direction to where it has gone for the last 10 years, in that maybe accuracy isn't actually the most important thing now, it's distance? Because if you're looking at things like, say, that, so just if your team's going to press up on you, you need distance, really, rather than accuracy, because it's so hard to, even if you get accuracy, like, it's so hard for the player to actually win it, because,
yeah,
they're looking at, there's going to be two or three lads around you. Then there's also teams like Tyrone, where if you want to go short, you're going to win it no bother, but it's possibly the worst possible tactic you could have. You could come out with 100% kick out retention, but you're doing exactly what Tyrone want, and you're letting them retreat back, and then you have to break down all 15 of them to get by them. So maybe you're actually better off doing who was common, I suppose, tried it to an extent, where they're just like, let's just get it out there, and hopefully if the break goes your way, all of a sudden you've bypassed the Tyrone back.
But I still do think there's, like, you see a marked difference between that kind of hit and hope and somebody like, I think Cluxton is the best example of this, yeah, like a 65 yard act on the money, like, yeah, he, Cluxton can both get that distance bypass but also do it accurately to the,
yeah,
set, well,
obviously,
so,
yeah, that's the,
like, that's the ideal scenario. Yeah,
like, are you better off with, like, for instance, David Clark? It's not that he's not accurate for a short distance. It was just like them kickouts weren't on,
yeah,
sometimes. So if you actually had someone there who's just like, you just get it down the far end. Problem with Clark's is if he goes for the distance, it hangs so long in the air that that's very hard.
Murphy and O'Brien can try it then.
David Moran is just like, I'm a midfielder from the 1980s. Drop it in my hands. Yeah. It's good that we come full circle to Cluxton, though, because like his kick, he was riding the sidelines against Cork. Like, it was insane. He was like, every single kick out, I'm like, what's he done here? You know, as in, like, he's just kicked this into the stand and it would just fall perfectly on the line to a Dublin player who would go on the attack, and it'd be wide open from there. They could do what they wanted with it from there. But also, the one thing that hasn't even been mentioned in Cluxton this year, he's been, because Dublin have been a little bit wide open at times and stuff like that, he's been a brilliant goalkeeper in the true sense of the word. Yeah, like over the last, well, I suppose it was a little bit of it last year. We almost never seen him make a save for about 10 years there. But this season, he's been saving all around him. Like,
and the Kildare game was amazing.
An unstoppable penalty from Luke Connolly. And other than that, he hasn't conceded a goal all year. And he's made some brilliant saves.
Yeah, I thought the Kildare game, his two saves in that game was a standout. He also had a great one at the weekend. Niall Morgan had a great save with his legs where he kind of jumped over, committed to the dive, but then realised that, so got it with his knees. I thought the other chance, the two Roscommon goal chances, were like Craig kind of ran straight at him and then tried to drill it across the goal. I didn't think that was as good a save as it was. I also don't know if David Clark's save from James Donoghue was actually that good a save. It was a lovely height from, like, I don't know who has to be sticking that into either corner. It's the,
sure, we're not giving Mayo any credit, we might as well stay ahead.
Let's talk about that game.
The Dublin one, I just wanted to quickly mention Michael Darren McCauley, because it was funny. From, I think it was 2 years ago, the Dublin Kerry League final, I was at the game and he caught a mark or had a free and kicked it away. And I was like, turned to McGovern, like, he'll not be kicking the ball again now for a while. ever since then, we've been watching games. Anytime I watch in Dublin, we'll always be watching out for Michael. He's going to kick it. No, hand pass. He's going to kick it. No, hand pass. And I was watching the game at the weekend. This is now 2.5 years later. He kicked a brilliant outside of the boot pass into, I think it was Scully or whoever it was. And immediately, the girlfriend wasn't there. I had a text. I was like, Michael Darren McCauley just kicked the ball. And then straight away, as soon as the message sent, I had to send another one. And now he's just scored a goal, but he panned it in.
He's also playing the best football he's played in 5 years, I'd say. Yeah. And he's just, like, him and Fenton at both at their best. Like what
imagine,
a midfield.
Imagine being some poor divil in a back line and you've got Michael Darren McCauley come on running at you like a barrel, just gonna bounce off you. You've got Brian Fenton coming ghosting in to get on the end of any ball, bury it in the net, board over the bar, and then you've Jack McCaffrey coming running up the wing. You're like, what am I meant to do here? They must be the three most athletic middle third players in the country.
Kerry Mayo, lads. I was at it before we talk about the game. As a sense of occasion, as they say, was brilliant. Like, and I think I really hope Killarney gets to redo the main stand, because they do. It's the potential to be the nicest stadium in the country. Like the buzz about the town was absolutely incredible. Right up, I mean, hours and hours before the game. I know lads who got a bus in from Castle Islands, and they arrived in at 11 o'clock into Killarney, and I met them inside there and I asked them, what time is the bus bringing them home to Castle Islands? They said, 3 a.m. so they were there for the long haul. the town was,
they thought there'd be extra time in this Super 8 game.
Good night in Killarney.
It's one of the best
to the speak.
Yeah, it's one of the best spots in the country as well for that. Like I really hope that is developed, and I think it really, whatever about the game itself, it highlights the importance of getting out to these provincial grounds and getting games out of Croke Park.
Like, that's all the same. One of the things about the Super 8s is, like, I went down to Killarney 2 years in a row for the Irish Open when it was on down there. We were working at it. And my God, it was one of the best towns I've ever had for a night out when the place is full for an occasion. Like, it would have obviously been for the golf. But, like, how rare does that happen with a Kerry football game in the true sense of the word, when it really would be rocking, like,
yeah,
when
exactly.
It's what the people care about and they're in there, like, and it's, you know, and a good travelling crowd like Mayo. It's a kind of a joke really that it doesn't happen more often, you know.
And the difference that the final point is, the difference between Croke Park on Saturday and Killarney on Sunday, roughly similar crowds, so slightly more in Killarney, but in terms of having 30,000 in an empty Croke Park and hearing players call for the ball and it's freezing, versus getting out to somewhere like Killarney where the place is absolutely hopping, like, the difference that it, just in terms of what it does, like, purely from a PR perspective, is monstrous. The game itself, right, on Friday I said that I made the case for Clifford playing half forward and for a whole new midfield and for Sean O'Shea to come out. I didn't quite get that. I didn't get, well, Clifford was the furthest man forward in the field for the entire game. So that definitely didn't come.
Sean O'Shea to come out the field, you mean, now, not out of the team.
Sorry, yeah. Sean O'Shea to be allowed to drift back out and kind of forage around the midfield. Instead, what they did was, and it was obvious from the actual, the very first three of the first five scores, it was so obvious. And it was the Dave Morn was dropping back really deep, getting the ball there. And so of the first five scores, three times he hit Paul Gainey on the 45 and Gainey would turn. Once it was, he did a quick hand pass with James Dunn, who gave it into Clifford for Clifford's other score, and is coming around on his left, the exact same thing from Gainey to Clifford coming around the left and put the ball over the bar. But that was their tactic. So that, and it was
a again full of Gainey on the 45,
and then but yeah, in a kind of like, so like, but like
Mars is too young to get that reference, and Mick's not even paying attention.
I was getting my 30 second whinge ready.
But that's the way that Kerry are going to play. And on top of that, then you had a system or where they would slightly drop off back. So somebody like Shane Enright would come in. Like Shane Enright had three intercepts in the first half, and like there'll be something up on site about this during the week. But if you were to see both Shane Enright's possessions and David Moore's possessions, I think it's really apparent about what Kerry are actually trying to do now and where they're going. And I think a lot of the stock, and I mean a lot of, I've seen a huge amount of former players like Trevor Mortimer and Aidan O'Mahony crediting Donny Buckley for that, the difference that they've made defensively, just pure up in terms of actually man-on-man markers. And I find that really interesting. But I think beyond that, if that is going to be like, that is the perfect marriage between a attacking structure, I guess, the most out of somebody like Clifford Gainey, O'Donoghue, who didn't necessarily play that well, by the way, and also covering yourself defensively so that you can cover, account for a team like Mayo, who are liable to try and attack quickly.
Morris, you've said a lot of stuff there, and I agree with it all, and it's interesting, but I'm going to go from the old school GA analysis book here and just talk David Clifford. What a player.
I'm open to that too.
Is that right, isn't he?
Whatever about systems, whatever. When you have a man in the full forward line who is as outrageous as David Clifford, you're going to be able to share the win in any game.
Do you know?
Incredible. Is that free with his left foot? Oh,
from the sideline, yeah. Side line. Absolutely.
He just stroked it. It's just like it, the perfect trajectory, the perfect camera angle, and just straight over the black spot. It was a joy to watch.
Was it you or PJ saying this morning that Clifford is now so good that he's one of those lads that's just going to get 7 points from playing a game and he's not even going to win man of the match?
That wasn't me.
Yeah, I think that was PJ saying that because it was just such a great point. He's just got to that. He's already at 20 at that level where we expect him to do it. I think there was a little bit of eyes of the world on him in a massive game yesterday, but I think very quickly we're just going to really just assume that he's going to get 1-4 in a game.
But he gets deserved plaudits for like his sensation of scoring and skill or whatever, but the thing that I noticed about him particularly on Sunday is that there's a dog in him as well. Like he off the ball with Keegan, that was some battle to, and even like he waved Keegan off when he got taken off after 15 minutes. Like a big massive wave from the full forward line. But beyond that, he's actually a really intelligent footballer in that. So I was on the far side, not on the stand on the terrace, and looking down straight down at a really good view of it, and Clifford was like coordinating the positions of every other forward. So he was, I could see him roaring at Paul Gainey, push, like leave a more of a gap in front of me. He was the goal side of the 45 and he was pointing at Gainey to push out beyond it and hover in that space. And then at the same time, it was Stephen O'Brien who had drifted in at this stage. He was shouting to Stephen O'Brien, get out away from me, you take that side. So he was coordinating of the front three kind of into a triangle, and he's standing in the middle of the field pointing where everybody's going to stand, kind of like in like a leadership role there really. So he's coordinating their attacking structure, and then you see the amount of work that Kerry do to actually utilize the full pitch. Like I thought the goal was the best example of that. That's when David Moore immediately got the freeze. The first thing he does, I don't even think it went forward, but it was a cross field direct all the way to the other side of the field with his pass, and Kerry attacked on that flank instead because Mayo had actually come up that left side. So just naturally, there were too many players in there, they were exposed that side. So Darren Morton carried until somebody met him and then popped it over to Stephen O'Brien, who carried until somebody met him and popped it across to Gainey, and it was a goal. Like it was very simple, but it maximised the full space that was available, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, all jokes aside about Clifford, what you were saying in the answer is that like, getting Gainey in the 45 to bring Clifford into the game, James Donoghue dropping deep as well, that it is amazing that shows you, like, just forget about everything else, how good and how
the stock you put in him,
reputation is within the Kerry camp, that they've built this team or forward line that features Paul Gainey, James O'Donoghue, Stephen O'Brien, and they're all built around how can we get the ball to these lads, how can we use them to get the ball to David Clifford?
I'll tell you, he's already better than Cooper. To me, Cooper was a one-trick pony.
Two tricks.
Yeah, but I'm only saying one. That was what Martin McHugh said. I always get that wrong. Two-trick pony.
Before we move off this game, there's a load of other points that I wanted to make, but we don't have time. I'm going to do something up on site in this during the week, so you can keep an eye out for that if you want. The only other thing, Killian O'Connor, speaking of episode 4, is Killian O'Connor is now the highest scoring championship record. It's an outrageous. So his stats right now is that he scored 23 goals and 285 points. That's in 51 games. He's averaging over 7 points a game for Mayo. I think the only time you'd really appreciate him is when you see him without him, like the game against Roscommon and the massive drop off that his absence has. I think it was Mick, you said earlier in the year that he's easily Mayo's best forward, and I think it's pretty apparent right now.
I got attacked, but I did. I think he's their best ever player. I think so. And look, I'm one of the people that might be saying that Mayo people are going a little bit overboard on this, you know, almost treating it as bigger than the match itself, because, you know, that's what Mayo fans kind of do, fair play to them. But, you know, he is an outstanding footballer, and I thought everything that Mayo did good or looked dangerous or nearly got them back into it with that goal, you know, creating the crossbar. He did miss it, I suppose. I shouldn't probably give him too much credit for it, but it was brilliant play to get there.
It was a great attempt. Yeah. You could see what he was trying. It was kind of trying to muster something out of nothing.
And again, you can take rumours for what they are, especially when they come from Mayo, but when you think of how bad a condition his knee was supposed to be in and whether we thought we'd see him again, and for him to come into these two games and be, like, obviously be so good against Galway and then be their only shining light yesterday. You know, he's come back at 100%, and if they're going to do anything, they're going to have any chance of getting out of the Super 8, it's going to be down to him, I think.
Yeah. 30-second whinge time, lads. Mark, you're up first.
Oh, Christ. What am I going to whinge about? No, this has nothing to do with GAA, right? But it's going to creep into the GAA, no doubt, once Google cops on to what the GAA is and realises it exists.
Okay.
But I want to give out about constant push notifications from either certain news apps or from Google. I seem to be getting all these now all the time with updated scores and spoilers for TV shows that I haven't watched yet. And what it seems to be lately is constant push notifications about people being killed, a child's been murdered, Brendan Grace is dead, this other person's dead, this other person's been found guilty of various grievously terrible crimes. And it's like, why do you keep interrupting my day with this horrendous news? Why can't it be, it's great weather outside and what a day to be alive?
I didn't see that coming. I don't know how relevant it is to a GAA podcast.
It's going to creep in. I keep getting sent...
What you wanted to wake up to on Sunday morning was push notifications about Jack McCaffrey.
Isn't Jack McCaffrey class? Not... 5 found dead in horrible rape murder case or something.
Jesus
and
Christ.
It's just like, but this is what I keep getting sent. And the other thing,
you don't have to bring it into our lives.
Terrible news aside, what kept happening to me last year with Google was that they'd keep sending me like Real Madrid 4, Granada 2, and it'd be a 4-day-old La Liga result that I had no interest in.
Wait, what?
And this was a 30-second win. It's gone on for 30 minutes
now. About Real Madrid and the Liga.
That's the thing. That cops, if they start doing that for the GAA, I don't want to be sent to Kerry Mayo.
Do you
want to
go next to next week?
No, go ahead. I mine's gone off my head after hearing that.
I don't know. Mine's about the GAA. I want to talk.
Of course it is.
I want to talk a little bit about the so-called Super 8s, right? We had the first round of it this week. Nothing wrong with the games, but the idea is to have all the best teams playing against each other more often, because that's what people want to see and that's what's needed for the game and that's what's needed for the competition. 4 games, 17-13 for Tyrone against Roscommon, that's away from home. 33-20 was what it ended up with Dublin and Cork, if you add all the goals. 25-16 for Donegal against Meath, 25-15 for Kerry against Mayo. That's 4 points, 13 points, 9 points and 10 points. An average of 4.6 points, or average of 10.6 points a game in the difference between them. This was brought in for money and for no other reason for it. There isn't... The quarterfinals were actually fine. It wasn't the part of the game that needed fixing. It's fine, it's there, but the club player who has been screwed constantly the changing of the season was done for them in theory and bunched up together, and it means that we have to watch matches that are on at the same time, while ultimately the club player gets nothing out of it and the county player plays way more games, and we had to choose yesterday twice between hurling and football, which is needless. It's a long year.
Yeah, I'm going to make
my... over 30 seconds?
It was twice it. So
you went 3 minutes and it wasn't even about sport, Mark.
So I'm going to let Mick take my allocated time because I don't really have one. I'm a ray of positivity today.
So you're getting... You have your push notifications turned off, have you?
The boom...
Otherwise, you'd be dragged down.
Right, we'll talk about hurling next.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Well,
this is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Mick, if I was to tell you that in the first 5 minutes, Stephen O'Donnell or Mark TJ Reid and you go on to keep him scoreless, Cork will start the game by getting Harney and Horgan both on the ball. Horgan would score a penalty and look like he'd have them in dire straits. Who would you tell me would win?
And Horgan would score three. Was it 3-10?
Yeah, he got 3-10. Yeah, yeah. I'd have probably gone for Cork, Morris, to be honest. I thought the game was over when it was 1-1 to no score. But you should never write off Kilkenny, as you said at the very start of the show. You should mention, like, in terms of hurling, there's a weird part that is like we're in the most revolutionary of revolutionary times, right? That three of last year's semi-finalists are out already. The All-Ireland champions are the only team that are left. There's all kinds, you feel like any team could win in any given year. And ultimately, because it's a revolution, we're going to end up with a Tip Kilkenny All-Ireland final this year. And that's what's... I think that's just going to make everybody happy, really.
I was laughing at Liam Sheedy straight after the Tip game where he was...
Raging hot favourites.
Yeah, Osher Wexford will be raging hot favourites.
Raging hot favourites. Mind games 5 seconds after the match.
Thank Christ Henry Shefflin called him out.
Wexford do have a huge chance, but we'll get to that another
It didn't
time.
Matter. Like, he could have been asked any single question there. Like, they could have asked him, like, Liam, did you enjoy your day up here today? He's like, oh yeah, but next day out, Wexford will be... Like, no matter what, that was going to be his response to that question. Cork, an interesting one, right? We'll talk about Kilkenny and the due praise they get in a second, but they did the exact same thing that we thought they would. So you had Meade and Kearney dropping back off. We talked about Cadogan. We thought maybe he'd take TJ. He didn't. He took Fenley and looked like he had the beaten of him in the first couple of minutes. But then slowly you saw Fogarty, and Derek McGrath's analysis is great. Fogarty said drop back on the ball, got on a huge amount of the ball, hit two great points in the first half. Simultaneously, then you suddenly saw like the old... well, that's not fair, but the familiar warriors of Kilkenny start to stand up, and no one more so than Richie Hogan.
Yeah, Richie Hogan being back on the team is one of the biggest enigmas of what's going on this season for Kilkenny, because he made an impact in, I think it was at the Galway game, where he came on in the first half and played very, very well, and then just wasn't... I think he started the next game against Wexford, had no impact, was taken off early, and then had 2 minutes at the end of the Leinster final when the game was basically over and you're like, Jesus, Cody has given up on him completely, maybe he's not fit, maybe he can't get it. Then he starts out of nowhere and has a game for, like, the Richie Hogan of the last 3 years, where he's been at his best, is that he's not the kind of flying around making loads of space, but he's in the ruck winning loads of dirty ball and getting it out. And he was so effective. I know he got 1-2, and the goal he got was great. It was a beautiful little flick from Fenley, something he did twice during the game, like literally two of the nicest pieces of skill you'll ever see, by the way. If anyone hasn't seen them, one was a knockdown with his hand instead of catching it, and the other one was a little flick to Hogan for the goal. And just so, so much skill. Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, the Cummins breaking that down and Coach Humphrey while it happened was great as well, that he was able to highlight exactly what Fenley did there. Even the way he used his body, that you could, like, it was so obvious what Cagan was just going to break that ball anyway, and Fenley kind of recognised it, but recognised he couldn't get his head across his body, so got his hand up to
just
break it down. That was lovely,
knocked it down, and it was a clear score then, you know. So, like, that was brilliant for Fenley, even though I thought Cagan had a good game in him, but Hogan got that 1-2 and that was class. I think he had another wide as well, but it was everything he did in the middle. He was just making Kilkenny tick, I thought, and he was either stopping a lot of ball coming out, or he was winning a lot back in the forwards and kind of giving it off to sort of TJ or one of the other lads to kind of knock it over the bar. So it was brilliant to see him. He came off fairly early in the game either. He probably doesn't have that much hurling in him, but that's what Kilkenny kind of had. And if you look at what made them a little bit different yesterday, you're sort of thinking, right, it was Walter Walsh come off the bench and look like Walter Walsh, played really, really well. Richie Hogan looked like Richie Hogan. TJ and Fennelly are in there. And then you've got the young lads like Mullen and stuff like that who are definitely coming into their own, but need kind of still are at that stage where they're the young lads. They can't be leading it. They need to be being carried a little bit by the other forward. And from 1 to 15, I thought that was the way it was for Kilkenny. It was the experienced lads were leading it and the other lads were kind of coming behind them. It wasn't left all on their shoulders. And it was a bit in the Leinster final. And they didn't have it, you know?
Yeah, there seems to be like the... I think if I was to sum up the Brian Cody mantra, like what Kilkenny seemed to always say is kind of this, like, not today attitude. Like, just absolute, no, not today. Like, and the player who... to me, actually stood up for that the most was somebody like Adrian Mullen. Like the way he has changed up his game within the space of a year. We talked about seeing him taking off for half time and thinking, geez, are we even going to see him again for the rest of the year? And the bounce back that he had in terms of his attacking potential. But then this game, you mentioned Hogan working back. I thought Mullen, the way he worked back as well, was incredible. And trying to, and I wonder, is that Cody recognizing the way the game is going now and bringing like this savage half? Really hard working half forward line back way back out the field to get them to forage out there, and simultaneously you saw Brendan Cummins analysing at the start when they started going short with their puck outs, so you saw Joey Holden coming and getting on the ball like that was, again, it's just weird not to see Kilkenny lumping ball along into the edge of the square.
They did that, and also they adapted. They didn't play a sweeper, but somebody Cork had five forwards, so Joey Holden started holding his position, and it plays like a sweeper. It's basically him just staying in his position, but it made a huge difference and it cut off the supply to Horgan. He still got three goals. You know, they definitely did. They were learning, they were adapting as the game is going on. And it's a weird thing to say about someone who has so many All-Irelands, but it's not something that we've always said about Kilkenny, really, you know. I think it's their best performance since they won the All-Ireland in 2015. I thought it was the first time they looked like real contenders ever since then. Even when they got to the final in 2016, they just looked like they were just kind of off the boil completely all year and never turned up in the final when we just sort of expected them to. This is the first time they've looked like champions again. Like,
Mark, if you were to give me one word to sum up the performance of Patrick Horgan, what would it be?
Outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to go red hot. I don't know why. That's clearly two words.
Jamie Ball was on Twitter after the game and he suggested that he thinks Horgan might be Cork's best ever player.
Yeah. Part of me was
always Cork to have 28 All Ireland.
This is Cork, of course, home to Chrissy Ring.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I slurred there. It sounded like it made him sound like a porn star. Christy Ring, not Chrissy Ring.
I think
Chrissy was his sister. Fine camogie player.
I think in terms of going out to try and like carry a team single handedly, I don't think this is Joe Canning-esque in terms of what Patrick Horgan has done and has continued to do for Cork. I think it would be an absolute travesty if he doesn't get an All Ireland medal, because it'll be wrongly, 100% wrongly, it'll be an asterisk in the same way that it was for Joe up until when he got his own. And I think it would be unfair that his career is ever kind of quantified that way.
It's the catch for, was it the second or third goal?
His third goal. Third goal. It was outstanding.
There's two things in that. One, the catch was outstanding. And two, it shows how Brendan Cummins is such a brilliant co-commentator. His analysis,
a lot of praise in this podcast.
It wasn't even like, you know, Oisín McConville thought it was great. We're talking about Tomás O'Shea before and they're explaining things and, you know, that aspect of being a great co-commentator where you're actually telling people something that they might be able to see on camera or at home or whatever. But it was just Brendan Cummins' real hurling, typical like hurling language of where it's like, look at him there, I'm going up for it. And he goes, I'm having that. Back in the net.
It wasn't a bad impersonation, actually. That, do you know, can I really, really briefly go on an aside about annoying people on Twitter? Okay. Because that was one, I genuinely thought that's one of the most determined and best goals I've ever seen. He took it out of two lads' hands. It wasn't even high, it was more kind of sideways.
Ripped
it and burst through a small little hole and went on. Put it onto the hurley because he was running out of steps and hit it off the hurley to a way that Murphy couldn't get to, right? I counted it a couple of times. He took either 5 or 6 steps. Right, I know it's too many, but at full pace in hurling around the goal, I've never ever seen something like that called. It didn't feel like a steps goal, if you know what I mean. You know the way the one that Shane O'Donnell got a couple of, against Galway last year, and they were like, ah, lads, it was 15 steps, and that was the way people reacted. You either thought it was a great goal or it was steps. But
about four people reacted to me. Oh, he took about 12 steps. It's like, how could you look at that genius? Like, even if you were a Kilkenny fan, they were still about 4 points up at the time. How could you take that bit of genius and immediately go, nah, fuck it. I'm going to give out about that now.
I actually, yeah, he borderline overcarried.
Yeah, like, he either took five or six. I didn't know which.
I was like, was that steps? And I went back and counted it. And it was one of those that he was actually going so fast and they were so quick one after the other that you couldn't count them in real time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't tell when the ball released out of his hand. It was either between five or six. It wasn't massively overcarrying. But, sorry, I will go back to a way more positive thing, right? Horgan, when you see the two goals he got, right, he got one point out under the Cusack stand half, that was just absolutely beautiful.
The right, yeah.
When we talked to him in Glen Rovers, I kind of asked him this really awkward question that he didn't really know how to answer about him having this ability to get a little bit of space through a quick turn and a kind of a lean back.
Yeah.
And he was the best I've ever seen at getting that little bit of space. And in fairness, he didn't, like, you know, it was an awkward enough question for him to answer, but like, that illustrated it. You know, he turned twice.
Because it was two Kilkenny defenders there with him, yeah.
And neither of them knew what had happened. And the ball was over the bar, you know. And the second goal he got, which we haven't talked about, where he's fouled on his way in, and then instead of waiting on the referee, just from his knees, buries it into the back of the net, like, you know.
Does that make a score? This happened in the Kerry game as well, where I think, I can't remember actually, I did watch this game back, but I can't remember if there was an advantage for Stephen O'Brien when he looked like he got fouled, but then played on and kicked an outrageous point. Just the referee held up his hand as if to indicate that he was either given a free or letting him play advantage. And O'Brien just kept going from the ground and kicked the score off. Like, he picked himself up and put it over the bar.
Vaguely remember. Yeah, Jack McCaffrey goal was that.
Exactly,
he was on
the
ground and got up and turned around and put it in the back of the net.
Before we move off this game, is this the end for this current Cork management? I think that's a question that is doing the rounds right now.
People in Cork are thinking, yeah. For sure, yeah. Like, I find it very hard to judge Cork yesterday. I'd be interested to know what you think about it, because we're talking about Horgan. I thought Alan Cadogan had a good game, right? And after that, right, Stephen McDonald kept TJ quiet, didn't he? His distribution of ball was terrible. I'd say he gave it away five or six times. You know, I can count to four even straight off the top of my head. You know, Owen Cadogan had a pretty decent game on Fenley. Owen Cadogan's not that young. Neither is Stephen McDonald. You know, they brought in like O'Leary this year, and you know, he didn't have a big game when it was there. And then you look at kind of their bench. Conor Lehan is brought back in. It's the same Conor Lehan we've been seeing for years. He could be good. He might not be in the game. He wasn't in the game this time. You bring on Shane Kingston, who's quiet. Or I think they brought on O'Malley first, actually. And you're like, who is there? Daniel Carney didn't have the impact he had last year. Yeah. And you're like, do Cork actually have the squad if people aren't there on the day? It isn't always the manager's fault if not everybody turns up on the day. I thought O'Donoghue was poor. Mark Coleman had a quiet time, wasn't really in the game, got one score. But, you know, like, just none of their players really seemed like they were at full pelt. That might be the management's fault. It might be an atmosphere in the camp. I don't know. They've looked good at times this year, but they were very good against Limerick. But actually, other than that, what have they done? You know?
Yeah. Isn't it
like Kilkenny played really well, but they're not like the Kilkenny of old. You wouldn't expect like to be going out and getting fairly well beaten. If it wasn't for Horgan kind of keeping them back in the game in the middle of the second half there, they would have been hammered.
At the same time, I think this would be kind of a sad way to back end Moira's reign, given how close they came last year. They were in a puck of the ball of beating Limerick, obviously won the Munster Championship. I thought he did everything he could to try and expand his squad. Like, all year people have been clamouring for Lehan to come in instead of Aidan Walsh. They got that, and I thought he was really quiet at the weekend.
Funny, so, didn't bring on Walsh, actually.
Yeah, it was a weird one, yeah. And especially when it seemed like as the game were on, Kilkenny kind of copped that Harney was their only like real forward outlet.
Option. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're right. I think I'd like to see him be given another chance, and but I think people will know, and I think John Myler will know whether this was a systematic breakdown or whether a few key guys just didn't turn up on the day. And I think they'll know that, and the team will know that, and I think ultimately the decision will be made on the back of that. You know, we don't.
On the other game, Tipperary had a unimpressive, or certainly a...
I was really impressed by Leash. Like, I have to say, I was.
That's the kind of positivity we want in this podcast.
And I don't want to be too kind of like... what's the word? You don't want to be slapping people on the back, patronizing for a 10-point defeat either, you know, because they won't want that and they want to be living at this. But actually,
also, it wouldn't have been 10 if they had a man sent off.
You don't know either because, yeah. like, you know, Tip were kind of at a half pace for the second half of the game, and it wasn't for a load of balls just broke to Noel McGrath and he just hit them over the bar. That happened about three times in the second half. I think Tip could have kicked on if it was a closer game. But in the first half, what was brilliant about Laois was that Tip would do the inevitable that you always see in a hurling game between a stronger side and a weaker side, where it looks close, it's 2-3 all, and then the goal comes. And then Tip did that twice in the first half, where he just goal at killer times that you would expect that, you know, this will end up being a hammering. I hope Laois stay with them. And Laois just plugged away and they'd get the next couple of scores, and then they got that goal before half time, and suddenly you're going in. The noise when the half time whistle went was absolutely huge. And they're just a group of very, very good hurlers who are, you know, they're physically very good and physically very quick as well. And I think, you know, obviously they play in the Leinster Championship and Division 1 next year. I think that will all improve. It goes back to the exact thing we're talking about with the football. But very, very, very good performance. I really just had a fear that this might be a kind of a 20-point game, yeah. or, you know, even you can have 15-point games that feel a lot worse than this. This was close. Very, very, I think, harsh sending off. It was a strike. It probably was the real rules. I would question why Paddy Maher goes down like a ton of bricks there, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think
same. Yeah.
I think Tip fans will actually look at that, especially against a team like Laois, and go, why is he doing that?
It's just needless, yeah. yeah. The scenes after the final whistle, I think we have to talk about that. They were absolutely incredible. I also think it's the best thing about these kind of games is that whatever, like, there should be a duality to it. It should be both like a huge occasion for players, but also for fans. Like, there was Dermot Crowe in an interview in the Sunday Independent at the weekend where Niall Wrigley, who got to go to O'More Park, remembered when he was manager 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago, when he was on the management committee for Laois, only 4 players turned up for their final training session.
Wow.
Cahir Healy told us about that interview, went up at the weekend, his mam being in Port Laois, and she had hamstrings and hardship, and she was the last person to leave Port Laois because she, like, hopped the fence to get onto the fields with the players. Like, the sense of occasion that she got out of it. And I think there was such a nice kind of marriage of both at the end, at the final, to see that what it meant, not just for players, but for the county, which is probably when we talk about trying to strike while the iron is hot. Now I think that is the best positive that Laois have moving forward.
Yeah, and it's also like what sometimes sport can be about, is about this, like, kind of real pride in what's happened from both sides. I think I think the players were really appreciative of the crowd that went there and the noise and the support that they got, and I think the crowd were super proud of that, those players who literally did die on their feet and give everything for 3 weeks in a row in the 3 biggest games of their careers, one after the other. And it made it such a journey. And when you're watching on TV, there was the usual kind of post-match, it was handshakes, and it was, you see some of the Tipperary lads, and then this noise just started to rise, and you were like, wow, what is going on here? And then it kind of eventually goes to the wide shot, and the Laois lads are gone up to the hill to kind of thank the fans and eventually start doing a round of honour. And it was literally the noisiest I've heard Croke Park all this year, and every single fan had stood there, had stayed there, and every single one of them were standing up, and it was just every Laois fan that was there in the day. And it's actually one of those great GA moments that I don't think you can replicate, really, by, you know, it's not just about sometimes success or whatever, it's about achieving your potential and giving people a bit of pride to go to the games.
It was interesting, the tiered championship discussion. Now, I'm awkward, I don't want you to even respond to this because I don't want to get into it, but whatever about the argument for tiers, surely to God, the success of Laois and the Joe McDonagh Cup and this sort of event would indicate that if you are going to bring tier championships into football, you have to do it where you start out with the tier and then you get into the All-Ireland series off the back of it, rather than
it's not a
getting
demotion,
knocked
yeah.
out and then going off to the Kiss Me Arse Cup for whatever.
Yeah, which has already happened and not worked.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, before we
melt.
Yeah, melt.
It's warm. It's warm in here.
It's the warmest room I've ever been in my life, and I've been in a sauna on at least 3 occasions.
We don't turn on. We don't want our air conditioning or / fan interfere with the noise of the podcast. So we melt in here for you twice a week, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you're wondering.
And in return for that, will you please, please, please rate and review the podcast? If you're listening to this through the buzz.ie podcast feed, go and subscribe to the buzz.ie GAA podcast feed. You'll find it in the exact same place if you search for it. We'll be back on Friday. I'm referee again, am I?
You're referee. I'm going
to
sit out.
This is a joke that I don't get a chance to defend my belt. Defend your belt?
You don't have a belt to defend.
That I don't get to re-win it. You just discard me after one game.
After two games. You lost last week as well, did you not?
All right, we'll chat to you on Friday. Take it easy.